You got it.
Let's do this. It's live. I mean, it's for the holidays, right, Dan? We're here. We're here for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I keep on the silly gesture thing, even though I trigger it with like the thumbs up all the time on accident. There you go. Just for intros like that. So you can walk into a digital room with some confetti,
I mean,
you know?
Yes, and to that. We're right on brand here. This is perfect timing. I'm here for it. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders. This is the second to last episode of 2023. Dan, you'll be proud of me. You'll be proud of me because I have done, hopefully, I have one last episode next week with David Mundy, and it'll be my 52nd episode of the year. Wow. 52 episodes, y'all.
The consistency in that. So hard. Well done. Congratulations. I don't think I've ever done something like every week for a whole year before. Like, I don't think it's ever happened unless it's like something addictive, like drinking coffee every day or something.
I will say I cheated a little where the first half of the year was pre-recorded, but I banked it. I banked it, and I am scheduled until March of next year. So I am setting next year up for success. And it's all thanks to that whole consistency seeds that you've been planting. And we're going to dive into that in a minute. If you are here with us on Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you. This is live, which is beautiful because that means you get to join in with us and enjoy the conversation. And I'm looking for you in the comments and I'm paying attention. So if you are here, say hello. And we look forward to your questions, which I hope you've brought in spades, because this is the time to dig in with the expert. It's going to happen. It's going to be brilliant.
Be selfish.
Ask your question. Yes, lean in. This is it. The end of the year. Gearing up for 2024. If you have it, let's hear it. I am here with the one and only Dan Sanchez, or Danchez. Hashtag Danchez. If you are following along with the one and only, this is all about audience building. Dan has been doing this for eons, it feels like. He's got a course on it. We're going to dig into that in a moment. If you aren't following him on LinkedIn, be sure to head on over and make that happen, because this is an episode for us all to sort of take note on and figure out how we are going to cultivate our audiences in 2024. The world has shifted, you all, and it is no longer a numbers game. Dan and I were just talking about this. And I was just talking about this with Andy Scherzini as well. It is no longer a numbers game of just like filling the top of the funnel with as many people as you possibly can and then whittling it down. It is now about who do I need to be speaking to and how can I build a relationship with them in the right way with value and intention. And that is why we have Dan Sanchez with us here today. Dan, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you on. I'm excited for this topic. I think it has been a long time coming. You've been on the forefront of it, and now you're going to help us all make it happen. And yes, that perfect timing. Stars aligning. All of the things. Tell us your story, Dan. You weren't always an audience builder. You weren't always a marketer. How did you get started? Where did your story begin? And how did you get to what you're doing now?
I mean, I'm a marketer, and I got to marketing through graphic design, which is kind of a weird road to take, but it was a great road because I found I love design. I liked making things. I liked making things beautiful. I liked visual communication, but at the same time, I started diving into more things. I started getting into web design because that's what people were paying for back then, and then social media, and before you knew it, I was doing people's emails and asking the questions of like, well, what should go on a website and what should go in an email? Starting to ask marketing questions. What's the purpose of this thing? What do I want? Where do people come from? And what do I want them to do once they're here? And all of a sudden, I started drifting into marketing. And marketing got me into one of my best jobs I ever had was working as a marketing director for a small university they were losing students right and left, just not getting nearly the enrollment they could. They were like just dying. And I came in as a marketing department of one for this dying college. And my first marketing director role, probably shouldn't have been even a director. I should have just been a
marketing manager. Assistant.
But they gave me the keys and gave me all the autonomy to do pretty much everything without hardly giving any input. is one of the best jobs I had because of the amount of autonomy I had. And, you know, I redid the website and the copy and the positioning and did all the stuff, ran all the ads, and we grew. And I grew my team, started hiring staff members and had lots of interns. But we grew the university. It actually, like, the things I did worked. I took the HubSpot playbook for B2B SaaS and applied it to the college. No college fairs, no buying SAT lists, none of the normal stuff colleges do. I just went right to lead gen from Facebook ads, Google ads, SEO, and it took the inbound marketing playbook and just applied it beautifully to the college. Later on, other colleges started calling me, be like, "What did you do?" Because we tripled the enrollment of the school. It was awesome. Who knew? Like, the inbound marketing playbook worked if you executed it right. And it was a thing of beauty. We, like, people would search the keywords and we'd be there, AdWords, SEO article, homepage, social posts, like, for all kinds of keywords. And then Facebook ads, man, 2015 to 2020 was a beautiful thing, Facebook ads was, before Apple kind of, like, killed them.
Well, or before they killed themselves.
Not the sad place it is today. RIP Facebook ads. But it was during that time, too, when things were going well and enrollment was going up and up, leads were going up and up, that I noticed a problem. And I noticed it before everybody else did because things were getting better, but I noticed the cost per acquisition, per lead, going higher and higher. And we were split testing the heck out of the landing pages and the follow-up to increase conversion rates, so nobody noticed it, but I did. And you could see the trend of where it was going. Everybody figured out that Facebook ads was so good. And AdWords was great, but we'd maximize that and we maximized SEO and there wasn't so much volume. We maximized the amount of volume over on search, and Facebook ads was just getting more expensive every year, no matter how good our creative was. And I was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And that's when the need for audience growth really was planted inside of me. And it took me a while to figure out what I needed to do. Because, you know, when you look at marketing, there's like, well, there's three major buckets to pull from. You can pay for it. You can go and beg someone to get on there in front of their audience. We call that earned media, right? Or we can build our own audience. And honestly, I didn't know a lot about earned media. I tried. I hired some PR people. You know, I submitted some PR newswire.
Little this, little bit of that. Yep.
Like, little this, you know. Try to do the press release thing, try to knock on media outlets. I didn't get any traction there.
You got to have real news.
So yeah. I was like, well, we need to grow our own audience. And I just didn't really know how to do it then. We did do one thing successfully, and we started a whole new website for a much more general audience, and we SEO'd the heck out of it. You're talking like 300, 400 articles, pulling in a collection of maybe 500,000 page views a month in site traffic. We never figured out how to get that site to turn into an audience. Going back, I'm like, oh, that was so good. I just didn't know how to convert them to an audience. Like, I should have just built a newsletter out of it and a podcast, but no, I didn't think about that. I was trying to get them to go from visiting the article right to lead.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It just doesn't work that well when it's broad.
Can't skip the middle.
But that led, you can't skip the middle. And I didn't know how to do the middle game very well, but that's really what audience is. Audience is the middle game. We talk about it as marketers all the time, but most of the time marketers spend all their time talking about product marketing.
Oh, interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm. How can we get people interested in the product? Because we got to get them more aware of what
we
do. We need to create a category around the product. It's all about me. And that's so much still what content marketing is about. It's the meme monster. If you've ever heard, I'm trying to remember what comedian that is. I think it's like Jim Brogan. I can't remember. There was a comedian that talked about like the meme monster, that guy who shows up at the table just talking about him and his achievements and how great he is and how much money he has.
Yeah. You know, or the one-up game. Meme monster. Yeah, all those things.
Oftentimes.
Yeah. John Doe.
That's what we're doing as content marketers.
Patrick, the meme monster. Brian Reagan and the meme monster.
There it is. Yeah. I knew it. I'm like,
Reagan. Right, I'm going to drop it in.
Meme monster. That's classically, that's what we're doing as content marketers all the time. It's all about us, me, my. The problem is, if somebody's not in market for exactly what you do at that time, which is most people, right? Like, how many people are in market at a time?
Yeah.
Maybe 5%. Let's be generous at 10% in market in the quarter.
Meaning that you're talking to the right audience at the exact right time that they need this thing that you're selling. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 10%.
People that are, let's call them problem aware people, people that know they have a pain point or are even open to what you're selling right now. Most people aren't. It's reality.
Yep.
So what do we do?
Yeah. What do we do? Yes. Let's pause there for a second because you're skipping ahead here, Dan. Stop giving the game away.
I'm skipping ahead. Shame.
No, I think whatever everything you're saying, we've all lived, right? Where we've played the top of the funnel and we've played the bottom of the funnel and we sort of like skipped the middle of the cultivation piece of like, I got people to my website and I got leads to download this thing. And then what, right? So it
now what?
It's moving now. There's a shift in the universe. And Trevor Van Worden will totally agree with me on this. Hello, Trevor. Welcome to the show. On there has to be this relationship building middle ground of how you meet people where they are and then continue to harness that relationship until they're ready to actually work with you and to build that trust in the meantime. We've broken trust. We have broken sales and marketing has broken the trust with the buyer and we are paying for it in dividends right now and we have to make up for it. And Dan is going to help us figure out how to do that. Before we get there though, Dan, and give the game away. I loved your story and working with universities is such a great place to start. And being the sole marketer is a great place to like figure it out. It's where we've all sort of, I remember being a solo marketer on a $10 million account at a very big agency. When you show that you're very capable, they keep giving you more stuff to do as a single person and tell you to figure it out and you do. And that's just what we've done. And it's a wonderful place to be until it's not. And I think we're all sort of turning to the experts to say, well, what do we do now? We've been figuring it outers as long as we can possibly could be, but now we need a little help and support, which is why I've started the show, which is why you've built courses, which is why there's so many marketers out there speaking up to say, this is what works and this is what doesn't, and stop doing these things and start doing these other things. So yes to that. We're all on the same page in terms of where the market is going and why. Before we get there though, we're all human and life is hard in this moment. It is Q4. We got a week and a day left. If you're taking the week off between Christmas and New Year's, this is it. This is the final stretch. But what is it for you, Dan? What's hard right now? What's a challenge you're currently facing?
It's funny. I ran into a challenge a couple of weeks ago, and now I'm taking massive action on it because I realized it was a problem for me and therefore probably is a problem for many. If this year of 2023 has been a year of AI, people have been waking up to that, and I've been using it. I've been in ChatGPT. I have a pro version. I'm using AI tools, and I finally was just like, you know what, it's time to roll up my sleeves and figure this out and go into the deep end, you know, get out of the shallow end where I'm playing and actually like really start to learn it. But I found there wasn't a lot of like substantial, this is how you know where you're at and this is where you need to go. There wasn't a roadmap of how to learn AI for marketing. At best, you can find some YouTubers or people on TikTok talking about little tips and tricks here and there, and they're all general, like maybe applied to business, but there's not a lot out there. So I was like, okay. So I've been taking a swing over the last couple of weeks of trying to figure out how to organize what should be, and I've started interviewing a bunch of people around AI to try to figure that out. Not mainly just for myself, but of course, if you're going to do it and try to figure it out, you might as well build a roadmap for other people to follow. So that's the problem I've been trying to figure out over the last couple of weeks, because I'm using AI enough to know that like this is for good now. Like I remember doing this in 2010 when it was social media and feeling like this is the future. People are talking about it a lot, but people haven't really started catching on to using it a lot. It's just talk. It's all theoretical. All the podcasts are talking about what's going to happen 10 years from now. And I'm like, forget 10 years from now. Let's just talk about what's working now or like maybe 6 months from now. So that's the problem I'm currently running it, like trying to tackle. We'll see if I start applying some audience growth principle to that and build an audience around that topic. We'll see.
Well, we are on the edge of our seat. And you're not alone in that topic either, Dan. I'm actually going to, you should join next week's episode with Dan Mundy, where he's going to actually walk us through how he uses AI to cultivate content he is building. The beautiful thing about his content is that it's not at a mass scale or trying to do a lot of content. It's about doing really intentional content using AI. And the content they're producing is gorgeous. And it's intentional. And it's just so good. And you'd be surprised that it was AI driven. And I can't wait to have that conversation with David. So these conversations are going to go beautifully together in the way you cultivate your audience and the way that you bring value. So yes to that, and yes to the challenge you're facing. And I can't wait to see what you're going to do in terms of how you figure out how to use AI to best build that content to meet your audience where they are. Because it's two different audiences too, and that matters. So hats off to you.
It's true. Well, I'm speaking to marketers with both sides, so we'll see how it goes. We'll see which one I end up becoming known for later on. But audience growth is not going to go away, so I'll continue to be talking about that for a long time.
I love it. Let's talk about audience growth. So you gave us sort of your origin story, like Batman, in terms of why audience growth sort of hit you, of why it was important in that middle ground. Talk to us about where you started. So you were hitting the top, you were hitting the bottom, but you weren't sort of figuring out how to cultivate the middle. So where did you begin on that journey of figuring out, okay, we need to cultivate an audience and how we do that?
Between here and there, I got a job at Sweetfish, who is a B2B podcasting agency. At that point, I had done social media. I'd even been a professional social media manager, but I'd not ever grown an audience. But it was Sweetfish and James Carberry that actually taught me distinctly how to grow an audience. He had grown an audience with his show B2B Growth, and I became a co-host of that. And he showed me how to do it on LinkedIn, and I took to it like a duck to water. I was like, is that what you have to do to grow an audience? I will say growing an audience organically takes a substantial amount of time, but I saw the effects of it right away. When I started posting, I had James coaching me through it, and we kind of built a network of all these friends. I kind of tapped into James's friend network on LinkedIn. That made a massive difference. And I posted two or three times a day for five months, every day, engaging everybody and their mom.
Let's
LinkedIn, and
let's unpack this because you said three times a day. I think a lot of us are lucky to post once a day. I used to post once a day. I think I'm down to once a week. The struggle is real. Why? And then you said to engage with everybody and their mother. I mean, I can post regularly. Yeah. That's mostly not a problem. Or when I was doing it well, it wasn't a problem. But actually getting the engagement was definitely a struggle. So talk to me first about how you were able to gear up to three times a day. Was every piece of content like took you an hour to 3 hours to write and really intentional, or was it just like about making it happen? No. Like, walk us through that, because I want to go lay down just knowing that I should be posting three times a day.
Yeah, it's really I don't know another way around it. There's a cost to it. If you want to grow organically without help from paid media or earned media, some people have natural advantages where they have leverage in some kind of way, or they have a paid budget to amplify their content faster. And that's a great way. If you have that, then it's faster. But if you're starting at ground zero and have no paid media or earned media or some other kind of boost somewhere, and I guess I wasn't completely starting from ground zero. I was the co-host of B2B Growth, just getting thousands of downloads a month. And I had James, who was commenting on my post, who had reach. So that made a difference and helped springboard it. But still, I took that opportunity and ran with it. Posting a lot of content in the beginning is critical for a couple of reasons. One, you get more at-bats. You get more attempts to try to figure out what actually works. That's a big part of audience growth, especially on the acquisition side, is finding what actually works, finding what actually gets resonance. And it's funny, I've been batting this around on LinkedIn lately, where I'm saying reach comes before resonance. If you're not getting reach, you're probably not getting resonance.
What do you mean by resonance?
There's no way to know if your content's resonating if it's not being seen by anybody. you're fooling yourselves, and B2B marketers are kidding themselves if you think you're getting resonance without it being seen by enough people. The algorithms judge resonance by reach. There's ways to game it and throw out crap content that still gets reach, but there's no way to get resonance without reach. You have to get it in front of people. If you don't, then how do you know if it's resonating?
Your
goal in the beginning is to get reach.
Yeah, sort of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because what does reach even mean in terms of your specific audience? Right? So
yeah, totally different. But if you're not getting dozens of comments or driving towards that means where you're actually having conversations with the right people over the right content, you're probably not there.
So in terms of like what reach means to you, does it have to be in your ideal exact ICP, or is it a bit gray to get your numbers up?
Oh, gray. Yeah. I'd be trying to shoot more broadly at first, because at first you don't even know. Look at any creator on any platform. There's exceptions to this. There's always exceptions, but they're almost always testing out all kinds of things until they figure out what their audience actually is. And then they start to double down on what's working. It's always a test and see at first. All creators have to go through the process. And I'd say that's the biggest difference between being a content marketer and a creator. A content marketer knows how to make content and push it out there, but a creator actually knows what resonates and can usually find it faster because they've proven that they know how to get it. They know how to get and keep attention. So in the beginning, the reason why you want to post so much, so frequently, is that it's like learning a language, right? It's really hard to make the jump, but then you start to hit a consistent point where you're just struggling with it, speaking it to the point where you start dreaming it because you're doing it so much. You're starting to build an intuition, a feeling, a sixth sense over what's going to work and what's not. So as each piece you post and you start to see who's interacting with it and how it's getting, some posts getting reached, some posts getting more engagement, trying to hone in on that signal, you start to build a sense of discernment around what actually resonates. And that's why it takes a volume of content for you to learn what's actually working.
Let's talk about that kind of content for a second. Because I, you know, personally, I sort of struggle with this because I like to talk about lots of different topics, which I think is a blessing and a curse. So I'm a mom, so happy to talk about my children all day. Can't help it. It's just part of who I am. And I love to draw parallels into leadership and B2B in that. And that content does pretty well. But it's not really like what my ultimate audience, my buying audience probably really cares about. So I could definitely build an audience around being a mom and being an entrepreneur and being a CEO all day, every day. But are those the people that are going to buy from me? That's sort of that's a struggle for me.
I don't think they necessarily have to be the same. You have to ask yourself, is it getting me closer to my buyers? Are they buyers seeing it versus just engaging it? It kind of depends. Look at Gary Vee. Gary Vee is mostly engaging with small businesses and entrepreneurs, especially a lot of entrepreneurs, marketers. Who is he selling to? Fortune 500 CEOs and CMOs, right? Okay. Very different audiences. CMOs are, of course, in his audience, but for the most part, it's a very different crew he's talking to. But he's using that as like, look at the attention I can get here. I could do the same for your brand, right? Let's look at Todd Clauser, smaller creator than Gary Vee. He's selling lavender for salespeople, but his audience is marketers. So he talks about marketing, how he's marketing essentially lavender and doing funny skits that are made for marketers, kind of making fun of sales.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. But naturally, marketers are becoming more familiar with lavender, but they're talking to salespeople all the time. So they're probably going to make referrals over to their sales partners. So it's a smart move in his case to talk to marketers about lavender as a case study, yet still plug it.
Oh, okay. Let's sit here for a second. Because I think this is important about who you're talking to. So for me, I can write content, like I said, all day in regards to leadership, in regards to being an entrepreneur, in regards to being a mom, but not necessarily in regards to what we sell, which is SEO, digital ads, in the realm of digital marketing. I mean, I can talk about that stuff, but I just don't find it I find like I'll just be on a repeat record of these are the things you should do and these are why you should do it. And it just doesn't feel interesting to me. So I don't write it about it. Right. Yep. So, but it sounds like that's okay. Like, if that's what the audience is interested in, regardless of whether it's my buying audience versus not, the fact that it's an audience, that's what matters.
Yes. Yes. You do not have to write about the core thing that you sell.
That sounds so counterintuitive to me.
Yeah. Your point, the goal is to build relationship and attention of the audience that you want to sell to, or at least somebody that influences them. Like, you can sell to the people underneath, like get an audience of the people underneath them, hoping that they'll influence the decision maker one role above them. It kind of depends. Better just to build a relationship with the people above them. But the higher up you go on an org structure, like getting an audience of just CMOs is difficult, but still worthwhile if you can do it.
But they're also human. Talking about things that are outside of necessarily these specific things I do and playing to more of the human element is like, because I'm human and they're human.
It is absolutely a way. Yep. You could totally build an audience of marketing executives who I assume is the one buying your your services. Are you selling to small business owners or mid and
scale? Yep. So if you're startup scale up, okay. So like you're ready to make that leap and like start really growing your business, like we got you.
Okay. So you're, yeah, your marketing VPs directors or VPs CMOs, are probably your ideal. Yeah. Okay. So that was a similar target for Sweetfish. But yes, you just need to build an audience of them more so than you have to be able to talk about your direct services. Because then if you have their attention, every once in a while you can come in with an offering of your services.
Right.
And you'll be able to, it's like free advertising because you've built your own audience of the right people. And every once in a while, you plug how you're helping people like them.
Yeah, and tell stories.
In fact, most companies get in trouble with what I call the meatball sundae. And that's a term Seth Godin coined on a book like long ago, but he had a different interpretation of it than I do. To me, a meatball sundae is a company trying to put all their content into the resource section of their website. But there's a problem with that, and there's a reason why everyone struggles to build an audience on their company blog. Because your company blog is full of all kinds of content. It's full of top of the funnel content as well as bottom of the funnel content. It's got top tips for those who aren't aware of the problem and need to start discovering how to solve it, all the way down to company announcements. Maybe things for your investors or your employees. Maybe new feature announcements or ways to use the product. It's a mixture of way too many things, so you end up with something that looks like a meatball sundae. Sundays are great. Meatballs are great. Stick them together. It's a horrible. But that's what we have going on most corporate blogs is that exact combination. It's different content for different people at different times. So my recommendation is to create a separate media brand that can talk to all the things your actual audience cares about and then leave your corporate brand to talk about, well, the corporation, the product. Have your product marketing here. Build a media brand with all the fun stuff your buyers care about here. Of course, content can be shared between the two once in a while because you still want to be able to advertise your product, of course, in the media brand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's my struggle, right? So I have tea time, which I love doing, and I really don't want to make it salesy, and I don't want to talk too much about like what, because at the end of the day, I'm here to create relationships with the people that I would love to do business with if they want and need to do business with me and my company, and my company's MKG Marketing. And so sometimes these two things are looked at separately. We have tea time over here and you have MKG over here, but like,
yep,
it's okay. But how do you help bring them together? Should be separate. Like, how do you help let one know that the other exists in a way that doesn't feel like you're giving one, like, I don't want to give the heart of what tea time is away, right? At the end of the day, though, I need a business to stand the other thing up. So like, how do you cultivate these things to work together in that way? It's tough.
You know, there's so many different ways to do it, but you can actually create, you just did one right now where you're like plugging in your company as an example, and now you're talking about it, right? It's like a crossover right there. There's many different ways to create crossovers from the media brand to the corporate brand. If you want a really good example of somebody who's doing it really well, just go subscribe to The Hustle. Very popular newsletter, bought out by HubSpot, makes a ton of sense because guess what? HubSpot is all over that newsletter in subtle and not so subtle ways. I mean, they're the sponsor across the top, of course, but every newsletter, there's like a big a download of some kind of like, hey, check out this new HubSpot resource to help you accomplish X. We have a new template that does this. We have a new template. We have a new book. We have a new...
It's even their logo on the, like, to go and download. It's their icon on the homepage, but it's the hustle as the brand. But you know that icon. So, you can spot it a mile away. But yes, that's...
They're look for all the crossovers and the hustle going back to HubSpot. HubSpot's doing it right. They also recognize the value of just having an audience that's not, because like HubSpot already had how many like emails and podcast listeners and web traffic. Why did they have to buy a newsletter? They probably had their own, but they recognized that the hustle had the audience of the right people and had a good content like flywheel going with their podcast and their newsletter. That they just acquired it instead of building it themselves. Most companies can't afford to acquire it, so you need to build it yourself.
Let's talk about the building piece. So we've talked about the who you're speaking to piece. There's lots of ways to do that, like we talked about. We talked about the consistency piece, and I think we need to even dig into that more, but we'll circle back on that. So let's talk about the how piece. So we know that we are in the business of needing to build an audience. We need to build the middle, right? We can get people to our website and we can generate leads all day, but like how do we bridge that gap, and then how do we cultivate it on the other end? So where do we begin? We talked about consistency and we talked about somewhat of the content, but I feel like there's a lot of missing pieces there.
So, there's so many different ways to do this, but let me give you one that I'm working on right now with a client of mine called CloStrong. CloStrong is a new AI company of many that's selling AI sales tech to help people negotiate their contracts stronger, hence the CloStrong, right? Increase win rate. I've helped them launch a media brand called Close Mode, right? Which talks about all things enterprise sales, not just AI, not just negotiation. It's a broader show. We're kicking off this show by just interviewing ideal buyers. So this is a classic playbook out of Sweetfish, which is kind of an ABM play more than it even is a content marketing play. But lots of people like to be guests, right? Let's see where we're going. You interview ideal buyers. So the VPs and the directors of marketing you'd like to get to know at the companies you think might be interested in your services. You don't sell them at all. And you don't try to generate leads from them. You literally just build relationships with them systematically. At the same time, you can start that way, start to build up your skills as a host, start to build up your quality of your content. Because at first, nobody's great at it, but you get better at it with reps, and you start to hone in on quality.
Please, love God, do not listen to my season one. That's all I have to say.
Everyone's got to go back to season one for inspiration, right? That's why I like to go to the YouTubers, like famous YouTubers, go to their like first videos. Oh, it gives me hope.
Like the Mr. Right? Beasts of the world. Like, go back to those seasons. Yes, okay, yep. I can agree with that.
Slowly but surely, you get a catalog. You start to get better at being a host and creating content. And you can start to input your own points of view as you're talking to guests. Maybe start recording some solo episodes. Maybe getting higher profile guests who you can have like little fun debates with as your point of view starts to develop yourself. You start to move from what I call an ABM style show to a thought leadership driven show as your own point of view develops and gets refined, as your hosting experience gets better, as you're able to actually draw out interesting ideas that help and lead and guide people, aka thought leadership, right? And you can start to transition to start to build an audience here. But it didn't start from ground zero. It started with you just building relationships. It's cool because those relationships can have bigger wins early on, right? Because relationships are powerful. They can win business. They could also be future employees. They could be partners for you. They can be referrals for their other friend who's at another company that needs your services, and maybe they don't. You don't know. It's serendipitous, that serendipity that really wins the day when you're building relationships.
Let's talk about podcasts, because they're definitely a hot topic right now. They're a hot commodity. The way that I built my show was not for the listening audience. It was to say, I want to have some interesting conversations. I've been having interesting conversations, and I just want to record those. I mean, my first season, like I said, do not go listen to it. But my first season isn't about talking to B2B marketers, which is now the show I sort of focus on. It was before talking to a lot of partners because that's just who I was comfortable with. So I was, it was easier to talk to my peers at first than it was to talk to my potential customers or like the people I really wanted to quote unquote impress. So like that's how I started, but it wasn't about the ultimate listening on, even to this day. Like I love listeners. I love that people are hanging out with us right now. I couldn't believe my numbers when I went live. That was wild. But it was never about that for me. Is that true in sort of this ABM model that it's nice to have a listenership, but that's not really like the ultimate goal? And is it ever the ultimate goal?
It's secondary to relationship. But of course you need it to be, you can't like completely ignore it. Otherwise you're doing your guests a disservice, right? They're coming on expecting to be an audience. If honestly, being asked questions, like I like to go on shows even that I know have no audience because I find so much value in other people asking me questions because they, like interviewers like yourself, end up pulling new things out of me that I didn't even know was there sometimes because they ask a question with a spin of it that I was like, I didn't know I thought that. Can I get the recording of that? So I'm going to turn that into content somewhere else. So it's useful to be asked questions in and of itself. But of course, most people want to be in front of an audience. That's why they've agreed to come onto your show. So you need to be doing some degree of audience growth in order to get them in front of your, in order to due diligence for your guests. But you're right. Relationship is primary. Audience growth is secondary. Eventually, you can flip it around and make audience growth primary because honestly, there's more leverage if your audience is a good enough size than even the relationships with the guests.
Okay, so let's keep building on this. I want to get to that audience piece because I think that's, honestly, I'm being a little selfish here, people, but hang in there with me because I think we'll all benefit. Selfishly, like that's where I think I am of I need to make that switch, which is really hard for me. But before we get there, in sitting with, okay, so you got the ABM method, you got some guests on, and I want to say, being a podcaster myself and having been for the last 4 years, it is not a walk in the park. And you've certainly done this multiple times now, Dan. How do people get started? I mean, you made it sound so easy. Just grab some people to have a conversation with and just keep going.
Start a podcast. I don't know. It's gotten easier too than it had even 3 years ago when I started. It's gotten so much easier and clearer because right now there's tools out there like Zencastr is my favorite where it's all in one. You can literally use it like Riverside. It's got the recording aspect. It got some production aspect where it'll take the two different video feeds and swap them back and forth. And then you can publish it and it gets sent out everywhere. And then they even have like the clips thing attached to it now too. So you can like within a few clicks go like, oh, here's all the clips. Publish, archive, publish, delete, archive, you know, and just kind of send them all out once you hook it all up. So it's gotten really smooth on the tech end. If you want to keep it super simple, like there's always Anchor, which is now Spotify for podcasters. If you just Google that, they have a free tool and you can literally just do solo episodes, record them. Honestly, find podcasting easier than any other medium. Because it's easier just to, for me at least, to come up with a bullet point of list and then just start talking. I will say that I've spent more time sitting in front of a camera, practicing talking in front of a camera just through Loom. I've built the media department, so I just had to get good at getting in front of a camera. There is a skill to that, but once you know it, it's, I don't know. I hate writing long blog posts, so I usually just turn on the camera, record, and then just take the transcript and have ChatGPT turn it into articles for me now. But it's even easier to be a podcaster because you don't have to come up with the content. You literally just schedule meetings with people. That holds you accountable because you have a calendar appointment with that person now. And then you just have to ask them questions. And if you're stuck on what questions to ask them, just find the thing that they're known for and ask them, hey, so help me define that thing you do. Why is it so important? How do you do it?
Stop.
What, why, how?
It's the easiest question ever. Giving my game away here, Dan. You're like telling people how you...
Come on, the five W's and how have been like the game for journalists for forever.
It's true. And he's making it sound very easy, folks. And just to like set it clear expectations, it does take practice and a while, especially if you're an introvert like myself. the struggle is real. But to your point, Dan, it's definitely just the consistency game, whether you're writing for LinkedIn or whether you're showing up for podcasts. Yeah. It's just getting in the game and making it happen. I will say that I started even simpler. I started on Zoom because everybody has Zoom and you can record.
Yep. Zoom's
and
good
you can
too.
Download it. The only problem with Zoom, yep, I've stepped up my game. I've, thanks to Peter Wheeler, I've graduated, if you will, where now I make sure that I'm recorded and my guest is recorded, and then we can splice them. Because I'm doing video now, so we can splice them. But if you're just doing audio, yep, Zoom is great. It is not fancy. Everybody has it. Have a conversation, record it, get an intro and outro, minor editing, make it feel natural, and then publish.
Publish it.
Sometimes you just get started, and the first ones are going to be really rough, and that's really okay, because you got to start somewhere. And like I said, you know, skip to season two.
Okay. Yep. Yep. Interview your friends first. Maybe do a solo episode of you just talking, then you interview your friends, and then you start reaching out to more people. People on LinkedIn. The fun thing is, like, people rarely say no to being on a show.
That's true.
So if anything, they say nothing. Yeah. And then, like, that, I've had probably 3 people in 1,000 different DMs I've sent to be on a show before.
So let's talk about your outreach then. So how do you ask people to come be on your show?
I have a couple of different methods. Like, if I'm doing the ABM thing where I'm trying to build relationships with ideal buyers, I'm probably doing that more systematically, where I'm using some automation tools to create a list and then systematically go and connect and then shoot them a DM and then have a follow-up. And I'm usually opposed to using automated tools for something like LinkedIn. But in this case, I started off doing it manually and I found I was just doing the same thing over and over again. If you want to improve your hit rate on those guests, then obviously customizing it with, like, hey, going beyond like, hey, I love that you're a leader in XYZ company. I'm doing a series that covers this topic, that whatever, like something really general so that the automation makes sense. But doing something more specific, like, hey, I saw you post about X. I'd love to talk to you about it on my show. Those are always going to work better because it's more personalized and you know they're going to be into speaking about that topic since they just posted about it. Or if the company did something remarkable and you knew they were leading the team on it, whatever that is, it increases your yes rate. Otherwise, like for my own personal show, I'm usually just looking for interesting things people have said on posts. And I'm like, I'll hit them up in the comments and be like, hey, like, would love to have you on my show about this. Sometimes they're in my comments and they start to argue with me, yeah, but in a polite, respectful way. And I'm like, hey, I love the debate, man. Let's have the, like, you want to come on my show and debate this out? I'll get those on there because that's just good content. I love hosting debates.
I agree with that.
And who else do I get? Sometimes I put out calls for guests, like recently with the AI thing. I was like, hey guys, I'm trying to figure this out. Who's killing it with AI? I want to do a whole series on it. Drop your names below. I want to interview almost all of you. And of course, people recommended themselves. They recommended their friends.
So
and I
well.
Just systematically started DMing all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I've done all 3.
That's my next line.
Yeah. So I've done all 3. I would say early on, ask your friends because you want to have honest, easy conversations that you're used to having. And then I think it's really easy to use automated systems when you're early on. Like, I had a single script and we went out and just, I said, this is my ICP, and we just went after it. And I got lucky. It was 2019 Q4 when I started setting out my DMs for people to be on my show. And then by February of 2020, my show was filled up because COVID hit, everybody was home and everybody was bored. So I got kind of lucky there. Maybe it's a little harder now to do, but I would say if you just are honest of like, hey, I'm starting the show, I'd love to have a conversation with you. Come on, let's hang out. Those work really well. And then once you have a great backlog and a good reputation, I'm with you, Dan. I love that I can sort of like handpick people now. And I love doing the calls out too. I did it earlier this year. I said, hey, I need to fill up my show. I tagged all the people who had been on my show before and said, who do you recommend? You've been on my show. Who should come on for the next round? And I was in it. I think you were part of that crew, actually. I was totally inundated. It was fantastic. And I got some amazing folks who I wouldn't have connected with before as recommendations. And it's been a blast. So those are all great ways to figure out how to get new folks on your show and to have great conversations. Totally agree. So let's talk about flipping the script now. So you have a great show. You have, you're easy to, you know, like we talked about, like, okay, we can handpick our people. But at some point it needs to come, yep. If you want a bigger reach, it needs to become about the audience who's listening. So how do you cultivate that audience?
Let's talk about podcasts specifically, because obviously you can grow an audience in so many different ways, from social to newsletter to YouTube to podcast to even direct mail. Like, there's so many different ways to build an audience. But let's talk about podcasting. It's unique in that it's wicked hard, like harder than all the other channels, other than maybe like direct mail or something. But it's hard because podcasts in and of itself has a horrible like discovery engine. Only a few people can be on top of the charts, and their charts aren't getting any bigger or any more niche for you to narrow it down. There's only so many featured podcasts in Apple and Spotify. So what do? There's, unlike YouTube, where you can grow a YouTube channel just through YouTube alone. Almost all the YouTubers and books written about YouTube do not talk about how to up your YouTube game through Twitter. Yet that's exactly what we have to do for podcasting. In order to grow your podcast audience, you have to find other channels in order to get people to your podcast. It's a deeper level of it, but it's worth it, because podcasting specifically is intimate and is just a deeper level of a connection and engagement with an audience. So it's not the top, very top of the funnel, but it's a step down. So you have to build almost a funnel in order for people to get to said podcast.
So it's not a single channel. I feel like what I'm hearing you say is it's not about being on one channel like LinkedIn or YouTube, but it's about being on many channels to be found.
At least two or three, or at least one and one or two others in order for your podcast to grow.
Yeah. So like I'm on Apple.
That's right, unique so to podcasts. Apple.
I'm on all, because I publish through Anchor. Right now we're going to switch to Transistor. Peter will correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
But there's, you know, they go out to all of the big. So you got Apple, Spotify, Pocket, Google, you name it. It'll publish to that. And then I publish to LinkedIn like I do right now live, as well as YouTube.
Yep.
That's helps. And then I also will transcribe it, create some show notes, and then publish to my own website. It feels like the only way to make podcasting to grow an audience is to make it as accessible as possible. Not just your video and audio, even transcriptions. But like, it's just as many different avenues as possible.
Yeah. Right. And if you want to set that on autopilot using something like CastMagic,
it's magical. It really is.
It's cool. Is it make your transcript and then run it through ChatGPT automatically with your custom prompts to make all the other content you want from it? I'm really hoping they help automate the process so that I can just publish it and then it goes through CastMagic and then goes everywhere else, so that I don't have to ever go in there again. Just set it up once and auto magically does it. I talked to their founder recently. I was like, come on, man, you need to automate the process. We'll see if they do.
They're working on it.
But you still have to build an audience somewhere else first, or pay to bring people onto your podcast. You can use paid media in order to bring people and just drive them straight to subscribing and listening to your podcast. And that works relatively well. The secret of a lot of these top ranking podcasts too, if you ever notice, like there's people ranking number one for the marketing list all the time. They probably got there through paid media, or they're probably paying for it regularly. NPR shows, they're all paying $100K a month in growth, or $100K a year to get a lot of those shows to the top and keep them there. That's their distribution strategy.
They also cross-promote really well. NPR and Vox. Vox does this really well too, where you'll be listening to one show and then they'll promote another show, which I think is handy if you have multiple shows. But that's a whole other podcast that we do not have time for.
Yep.
So
one other key I got to say for podcast growth, and I learned this from Jay Klaus, about a year just over a year ago, was that a newsletter is actually fantastic for podcast growth. Because getting someone to jump from something like LinkedIn, where they're consuming posts that take a minute to read, to a 40-minute interview is a big ask. Getting them to give up an email to subscribe to a newsletter is much less of an ask. So now my best play as an audience growth person for a podcast is to get people, optimize my LinkedIn to get newsletter subscribers, and then on the thank you page of the newsletter subscription, push the podcast hard. Even in the next follow-up automated emails, podcast. Hey, did you check out this episode? Then try to get them to that form. But now you have to make newsletter content, and that's hard.
I mean, it. So let's talk about that for a second. Newsletter content in the sense of it's separate from your podcast, or it, quote, as slash in addition to, or it's taking your podcast content and turning it into newsletters, because those are two different things.
Bunch of different ways to do it. You could do something as simple as creating an RSS-driven email so that every time you publish a podcast, a newsletter goes out with links to your podcast. Simplest thing you could do. You set that up once, you forget it, and let that thing run. I think on PodPage, the podcast website tool, it'll even do that for you automatically. Great. A level up from there is maybe taking your weekly podcast like this show, running it through Cast Magic, telling it to make an article based on the content that
You're
becomes
getting
your newsletter.
My game away here,
you
Dad.
Edit it a little bit. This is what I'm currently doing. If you want to go up a level from there, not only lead with that article, maybe embed the like a video from that episode, but have some other segments that are small, that are fun, that are a little easier, like tool, like the tool section, tools you're using, tools you've heard about that you're playing with. Shout out to things that you're seeing, curate a little bit, like find some LinkedIn posts that you've seen that are awesome that week that you've tagged or saved, and come up with a system to find them and plug those at the end of the newsletter. Create some little smaller sections that are fun and easy to kind of browse through. Think about like back in magazine days when we used to read magazines, a lot of the little fun was the little factoid stuff, like in the little box in the corner, right? What kind of little factoid and interesting things and curated content and little data points can you bring into your newsletter to make it rich? That might be somewhat related to the article that you made from your podcast. Of course, if you want to make it more robust, have multiple main sections. Look at The Hustle for inspiration. They have like two main articles and then a couple little like tips of the day kind of stuff, or a little like tweet of the day kind of things going on in there. They have like a robust newsletter, and that's what that would look like. So you can start simple and level it up on the way there, depending on how much time and effort you want to put into making a great
newsletter.
Seems
to be the name of the game is to A, start. Above all else, start. And start simple, whatever your lowest hanging fruit is, and then to level up, whether that's through podcasting, whether that's through building a newsletter, whether that's both. I agree with the newsletter. At the end of the day, I think what we're saying, what you're saying, Dan, is in terms of cultivating an audience, you got to make it yours. So it's all well and good to build an audience on LinkedIn. It's all well and good to, you know, I'm still calling it Twitter. I will call it Twitter till I die. Instagram, wherever you're building your audience is great, but it's not yours. And so having a newsletter, having a podcast, having a thing that draws people in that you're then cultivating and having the attention of is really what you want to get to. Let's talk about metrics here, because I think at the end of the day, this is what we all care about, that dopamine hit every time you see a like to that post or to that, or you're seeing people engaging with your content. The dopamine hit is real and we're all in search for it. But what does it actually mean to be building an audience? Is it really just a numbers game? Is it that 25,000 number, 100,000 number you're looking for in your LinkedIn? Is it that 50,000 number you're looking for on your newsletter? It's got to be more than just, we talked about initially, like you want to get the reach to start with. And then what?
Yes, the numbers matter. The people making fun of vanity metrics don't understand. I'm like, you guys, they slap vanity metrics like reach and likes and in comments and stuff. Like it doesn't matter because I feel like because they're not getting it. And I'm like, okay, it's like making fun of the thing that you don't know how to get. That's fine. But all creators I know obsess over these things. Mr. Beast obsesses over these things. And guess what? He's able to monetize the heck out of it because he knows how to, because he has the attention on the front end. Now, of course, as a marketer, your goal is to generate like really good MQLs, right? You need to generate actual interest. That is a lagging metric. You have no control over it. Shoot, you don't even have control over your reach. You only have control over the output that you're putting out and the quality of the output to some degree. We don't even know what really quality is. Audience gets to be the judge of quality, not us, not your CEO. So we have to control what we can control and then use all the lagging metrics of reach and comments and traffic to your profile. If you're going to LinkedIn, that's the next metric, is how can I increase the traffic going to my profile, which is really a landing page for you or your company. And then measure the, like, start setting up metrics to measure profile views to clicks on the links in your profile, right? That link at the top of your profile, the featured stuff at the featured post section, maybe even links you've hidden down in your resume. All those links, are you tracking the traffic that it's sending to the strategic places you want it to go, right? And then we can actually start to make decisions based on the numbers here. It's not like, oh, we need, like, you know something's wrong if you're getting way a ton of reach and all of a sudden you're getting zero comments. Yeah, that's a problem. But if we're getting zero comments because we're hardly getting any reach, it's like, well, let's fix the reach problem first, right? We obviously need more reach if we want more comments, because comments is what drives the game on LinkedIn. But if we're getting lots of reach and lots of comments and no one's visiting my profile, okay, now let's solve that. Can we get people going to our profile? Can we promise content over there? Usually people just click over there because they're curious if once you get the reach and the engagement. If people are going to your profile but they're not going back to your website, why? So you can troubleshoot each one of these little baby steps, but you should be optimizing for all of those baby steps because that's what they are. But if you're not optimizing for reach first, good luck optimizing for the other ones. You don't even have the traffic going through it to make the most of it.
Let's talk about the algorithm for a second, because I feel like that's playing a critical role in our performance. And as much reach as you can cultivate, I feel like there's some lagging indicators here in terms of the engagement. One is the hours no longer seem to matter. So like before, like you had to get as much comments and as much likes as you possibly could within that first hour if you wanted to be seen. The game seems to have shifted there in terms of that. And I feel like no matter how big your audience is, only a fraction of them are ever going to see your content to begin with. So correct me if I'm wrong here, Dan, you're the expert, but that's just my feeling of like the game I've been playing, which has been rough.
The algorithm's changing, but the other thing that's changing is just people's behavior on the platform. It changes, goes through seasons. If you hit 2020 hard right after COVID hit, it was a good time. That happened to be the time where I went all in. The market was also all in on spending time on LinkedIn because they couldn't go outside. They were spending more time. Tons of people lost their jobs. So what'd they do? They went to LinkedIn, right? So I that was a luck piece. I didn't know that was going to happen until afterwards. I'm like, huh, it seems like there's less attention. I'm like, well, what led to so much attention on LinkedIn in the summer of 2020? Oh, probably because like hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs or tens of thousands at least, right? Makes sense. That's starting to happen again. LinkedIn is maturing as a platform, which means it's, you know, you can look at Facebook and what happened there. You know, I remember the days when pages were cool and you were reaching 100% of your audience, and that slowly went away. And then paid was great. And then paid slowly started getting more expensive. It's kind of happening with LinkedIn, and that's okay, which is why I recommend the podcast or the newsletter game, because we should start siphoning this traffic off. Still, there's not a better place to play for B2B or solopreneurs selling to businesses or even as a career play than LinkedIn. Like TikTok has its thing going on, but I'd say TikTok is maturing. So LinkedIn still, when I post to all these different platforms, I'm still seeing the most bang for my buck as far as time goes and investment in LinkedIn. Was it as good as it was 3 years ago? No. Is it still really good and people are crushing it and getting massive reach still? Yes. For the amount of time you put in?
Still paying off.
It's great if you can supplement it with some paid too, but if you all got is organic, work it.
And you got to work it. You got to put the time in. And it is time consuming, but to Dan's point, it can certainly pay off, especially with the consistency and the audience and the messaging and then cultivating those vanity metrics, which are critical according to Trevor Van Worden. So, you know, what Trevor says goes. I totally agree. And yes, Trevor. Right?
Heart.
Right. And Dan is an expert and has certainly done a great job cultivating his own audience. Dan, where can people find you? they want to learn more about building an audience.
Danchez.com. I need to turn this to .com because that's where people can find me. Danchez.com. You can find the links to, of course, all the LinkedIn and social stuff, but courses, my newsletter. If you want to see anything that I've talked about and want to see like me practicing what I've preached today, then go there and you can find the links.
And we've talked a lot about podcasting, but to Dan's credit, it is more than that in terms of building an audience. There's lots of ways to build an audience. If getting on a show isn't what you feel like would be work for you. And actually, Ashley Kay asked a great question earlier on, which didn't show up in my feed, but showed up on LinkedIn, which is, she's just curious to know what, according to you, Dan, is a personality trait of a podcaster. In other words, what skills do you need to have to start on that journey?
Personality, I think you need to be curious. I think you need to be hungry. And that's one of the best ones that I've ever seen. A lot of podcasts are guest-based, as in they're interviewing people. If you're not doing that kind of a show, then you need to be comfortable with getting in front of a camera. I'm an introvert, and it took probably more effort for me to be comfortable speaking in front of a camera and just having my outline and going over it. Gosh, I remember the first time I did it, I had to do retake after retake. It was painful.
I had a prompter.
If you go to it's on one of my YouTube channels, you can see this video. Ugh, so hard. But I'd say curiosity is probably the greatest factor of all when it comes to podcasting. Your curiosity will lead you to asking the right question. It's kind of like the Dale Carnegie's, like do public speaking effectively. He says the key ingredient of all is excitement. Next, experience, right? But that excitement, and I'd say that applies to podcasting too. Like if you have a curiosity and you want to learn about it, you don't have to know anything about it. Just start getting cool people on the show or your friends on the show and just start asking them questions. The audience, your curiosity will mirror somebody else's curiosity out there, which is what you need to do in order to build a good audience. I find the people that I personally want to know from, and I ask them the selfish questions that I want to ask. And over time, I've started to learn that other people wanted to ask the questions too. I just got there first and interviewed them instead of other people, but they benefited because they can listen to it now.
It's so true. It was actually great advice that I got very early on in my shows it was Mike Kraft, my business partner, listened to one of my shows and he said, I think there's a lot more questions you could have asked there. I think you could have been a lot more curious. I was like, I don't feel comfortable because I'm not an expert. He's like, that's the beauty is you're not. So lean into wanting to know more about it because you're not the expert. And that just opened up a whole world for me. And I totally agree, Dan, that it does just come down to wanting to be an endless learner. You know, it's like the best school ever. Yeah. I say it about my podcast all the time. It has been the best education of my career. I completely agree.
Well, one last thing, and this has been my thing that's more unique for me as an interviewer, but it's become my thing, is I am just hungry because I want to know how to do it myself. Therefore, I ask questions about exactly how to do it down. So I'm literally taking notes. I had an interview this morning about how someone's using AI to prep for guest interviews. And I was like, tell me about that. No, what did you prompt it? Now, what did you do after that? What did you feed it in order to get that? I'm like trying to take notes because I want to do it immediately afterwards. And that's what drives a lot of my interviews, is because I selfishly want to know how to do it. It's like, I want to be able to execute it after the interview. Some people take different approaches. Some people come at it from a human element. Some people come at it from a philosophical bent. There's all these different weird angles you can take. That's mine. So find something that you're like, I love to find that way or that angle from it. And that will drive your curiosity.
I love that. Yes. I mean, do you think it comes down to like what you are most interested in and being able to really dig into it and wanting to become your own expert in that thing? AI for you, Dan, is a great example of that. Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, go hang out at danchez.com and absorb all of his information. And, he's got great courses. I took the audience growth one. And I think it's a great spot to really, we got some time coming up on our hands before the year end with the break. Hopefully y'all get a break, go take a break and learn from Dan on how to build your own audience come 2024. Make it a priority. Make it your goal. Make it happen. I'm here for it. Dan, I'm so grateful. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. If you like this episode, please like, subscribe, and share. We got one more show for you at the end next week with Dave and Mindy. I can't wait to host that one. It's going to be good. It's going to be good, just as good as this one. This episode is brought to you by MKG Marketing, the digital marketing agency that helps cybersecurity and complex brands get found via SEO and digital ads. Hosted by me, Carrie Gard, CEO and co-founder of MKG Marketing. And if you'd like to be a guest, come hang out with me, DM me. Let's do a show together. I'd love to have you. Thank you so much.